The final investigator I met with was Dr. Oh, who discussed the management of GU cancers during the COVID-19 pandemic.
This has been a crazy time for all of us, but obviously we've had to make adjustments in the setting of COVID and how we practice. And there's also a lot of things happening in GU cancers, really exciting advances. So I'm going to go over those with you briefly in this presentation. First of all, as a reminder, in prostate cancer, there are these different clinical disease states. In the yellow box, you can see I've highlighted non-metastatic CRPC, which is really a newly identified disease state. These are patients who progress by PSA on androgen deprivation therapy, but don't have any visible metastases on traditional imaging like bone or CT scan. And we've seen a bunch of activity in this area in the last few years, including at ASCO this year. Of course, we have three clinical trials that have led to the approval of enzalutamide, apalutamide, and darolutamide, because each of those drugs delay a new endpoint, metastasis-free survival, in men with non-metastatic CRPC by up to 2 years. I think we all agree this is a very significant duration of time before you find metastasis. But I was a little surprised that the FDA granted this endpoint as an approvable endpoint, only because it hadn't been validated before in any other disease state. But really, thankfully, with further follow-up at ASCO 2020 in the virtual meeting that just happened, we saw that each of these three drugs, these potent AR antagonists, in fact, did show a significant OS benefit. And in fact, it was quite significant. It was at least a 10 to 15 month improvement in overall survival, which led to a 22 to 31% reduction in the risk of death with early ENZA, APA, or darolutamide compared to placebo. Just the take-home message of non-metastatic CRPC is earlier use of AR-targeted therapy does lead not just to delayed metastases, but to really an improvement in overall survival. Now, in terms of how COVID-19 changed practice, obviously I'm in New York City. We're in the midst of the pandemic when some of this data was actually coming out, but it really hasn't changed my practice. And part of the reason is that there's not clear evidence that COVID-19 would be negatively impacted by the use of these androgen-targeted therapies. I'll talk a little bit about this later. There may even be some benefit to some of these androgen-targeted therapies in the setting of COVID-19. So my practice has not changed if I think a patient is a candidate for one of these drugs. The other disease state where there's been a lot of activity in the last few years is metastatic hormone-sensitive disease. Now, what disease state is this? Well, in the old days, when before PSA screening, patients would walk in with metastatic disease in their bones, PSA of 100 or 500 or 1,000. With PSA screening, those numbers went down, but actually in the last few years, there's been more of this, more people coming in with elevated PSAs and newly diagnosed metastatic hormone-sensitive disease. The other way you get to this state is shown on this slide, that you might have actually had surgery 5 or 10 years ago and your PSA is rising. And at some point, especially if you're not treated, you show up with metastases either in your bone or in your lymph nodes or elsewhere. And the activity really has been in several areas. About 4 or 5 years ago, we all saw that docetaxel soon after abiraterone showed improvements in overall survival, very significant improvements in overall survival. Up to a few years longer, these patients were living. And this was a real change in the way we thought about the use of chemotherapy and AR-targeted therapy with the charted Latitude and Stampede trials. It really suggested that waiting until patients developed CRPC was kind of too late. You really wanted to get these drugs in as early as possible if they presented with metastatic disease. And sometimes you'll see people call this castration-sensitive prostate cancer as a way to contrast it with CRPC. But in any case, it really means a patient who's just starting hormonal therapy for prostate cancer, for metastatic prostate cancer, and we've known for a long time that you should either decide on docetaxel or abiraterone. But we actually have had a lot of activity here too. The last few years, we had two very large randomized trials with OS as the endpoint, Enzamet and Titan, that led to enzalutamide and apalutamide. And of course, Arches supported the Enzamet study with an RPFS endpoint. So now we actually have 4 approved FDA drugs in the setting, 3 AR-targeted therapies and chemotherapy. And, you know, it's beyond the scope of this conversation to talk about which one you should use because there are pluses and minuses to each of these. But of course, one thing that COVID-19 did do is make us use less chemotherapy because even though charted chemotherapy is only 6 cycles of docetaxel, you know, 6 cycles of docetaxel in the midst of the pandemic was not a great idea. A, because we think it might increase the risk of a serious complication of COVID-19, and B, because patients didn't want to come in when we were in the midst of COVID-19. We're doing less chemo in that setting. Now, abiraterone, enzalutamide, and apalutamide, they are slightly different. For example, abiraterone, you're using prednisone, enzalutamide, and apalutamide, you're not. You may have to deal with the side effects of a more potent AR antagonist. But in general, I think all three are options in the setting of HSPC. Now, an interesting area that I think is just kind of getting out to the community is whether or not we should be radiating the primary site, the prostate, in patients, particularly with low volume metastatic disease. And this is because in the STAMPEDE trial, one of the arms was patients who received the standard systemic therapies could also be randomized to EBRT to the primary site. And the data looks pretty compelling to me. Low volume is defined as four or fewer bone metastases. And we have really adapted that as our standard of care in my practice in the right population, in the right setting, in the right patient. But again, radiation and COVID-19, for two reasons, really led us to delay the consideration of radiation in this pandemic. The first, because they'd have to come in every day. This is the kind of radiation we'd be thinking about. Many of these patients would be a standard IMRT, not five doses of SBRT. And in that setting, because we're usually trying to cover the pelvis as well, coming in every day for 8 weeks during a pandemic, not a great idea. So we are still considering it, but we've delayed. And of course, everyone knows that in New York, things have gotten a lot better. And some of the patients that we might have delayed are now coming in for EBRT. The third and, of course, final prostate cancer disease state I'm going to talk about is CRPC, of course, the final common pathway to death. Everyone knows that this data, unfortunately, has not really been updated in the last few years. A lot of the activity has moved to earlier disease states, but people are familiar with the fact that there are multiple choices in disease states of CRPC where the mechanism of action may be a little bit different. They all have comparable hazard ratios and p-values. So what would I say about mCRPC? Well, one thing we know is that the landscape is evolving, partly because of the disease states I just mentioned earlier. Because we're using some of these drugs like AR targeted therapy and sometimes chemotherapy earlier, by the time they develop mCRPC, we've actually run out of options a little bit. And we have to think about some of the other choices on that list. So for example, bone targeted therapy may be a treatment that we would consider because if the patient's already received AR targeted therapy or chemotherapy. I think CYP-T is the only approved immune therapy for prostate cancer patients, and it is associated with an OS benefit. So those are options to consider. And of course, chemotherapy does still retain an important role. For the sake of this discussion, I'm just going to point out that maybe the most common treatment pattern for mCRPC is ABI followed by docetaxel. That's not universal. There are a lot of some patients who get the opposite sequence. They may get enzalutamide. They may get other treatment patterns. But let's say this is the most common use of these classes of drugs, ABI followed by DOCI. So what do you do third line in this setting? There is some research that is informing us. Of course, the most important element here was the CARD trial, a randomized trial published in the New England Journal that compared cabazitaxel to a second AR-targeted therapy. In this case, it would be, for example, enzalutamide. And it showed that cabazitaxel had a significant survival benefit, a PFS benefit. Patients had higher response rates, but really an OS benefit led to its publication in the New England Journal. So it's something that you should really strongly consider. A lot of patients, I think, are undertreated with chemotherapy, even though it's a very good treatment for prostate cancer, especially in the mCRPC setting. And as I mentioned, radium is an option here, CYP-T if the patient's asymptomatic, certainly a clinical trial. I'm going to talk about PARP inhibitors in a minute, but that is an option if the patient has homologous recombinant repair mutation. In terms of COVID-19, you know, obviously I mentioned earlier that you want to avoid chemo, but listen, you know, beggars can't be choosers. If a patient is progressing and is very symptomatic, my take on it was that we have to keep pushing forward. And even in the worst of the pandemic, we still had 20-30% of our patients coming in because they just couldn't wait. And some of those patients were, in fact, getting chemotherapy, even if we delayed slightly. In the past month now, we have two new approvals for patients who have BRCA or other homologous combination repair mutations. And these are based on the PROFOUND and the TRITON2 trials. Olaparib and rucaparib were both approved in May. So this is an exciting development for prostate cancer because these are the first precision therapies approved for prostate cancer. You know, we're behind other disease areas. It's a little embarrassing to me because we've been doing a lot of research in this space, but it's really a big step forward that we now have clear evidence based on those trials that PARP inhibitors have value for patients who have HRR mutations. It's just important to remember that olaparib was restricted to 14 different HRR mutations, including BRCA1 and 2 most commonly, while rucaparib was only approved for BRCA1 and 2 patients. And of course, BRCA2 is the most common HRR mutation. In terms of COVID-19, PARP inhibitors can be myelosuppressive. You know, this is a small subset of our patients. remember, you have to be careful, but it really hasn't changed my practice, mostly because at least in New York, these drugs were approved right at the tail end of our most intense time period. Bladder cancer, I'm going to talk about two disease states. First, non-invasive. It's a very interesting disease state that we've talked about on panels before because there is a systemic therapy here, and that is non-muscle invasive bladder cancer, BCG resistant. Now, most of the time, oncologists don't see these patients, but there was a trial that showed a 40% complete response rate with pembrolizumab. And this is really interesting because pembrolizumab is really a drug that we as oncologists give, and urologists wouldn't normally give this. But there's been a low rate of uptake, probably because urologists are not referring these patients to oncologists. So for the most part, it really hasn't changed our practice too much, even in academic centers like ours. And intravesical therapy is still dominant. But I do think it's important for most oncologists to at least reach out to their urology colleagues and remind them that this is a choice for some of their patients. And of course, most oncologists will be dealing more with this disease state, metastatic disease, which is the risk that leads to death. And, you know, just as a reminder, this has been an exciting time, 9 FDA approvals in metastatic urothelial cancer in just the past 4 years. And I highlighted two of the drugs that are really the first line approvals, atezolizumab and pembrolizumab, both approved in cisplatin ineligible patients first line and those who progress within 12 months or on a platinum regimen. The remaining approvals are in second line and beyond, and I'll briefly touch on that. What are our choices in this setting? Well, platinum chemotherapy is still a first line choice. And as I showed you, atezo or pembro are also choices if you're cisplatin ineligible and or if you have a PD-L1 positive stain. So in the setting of COVID-19, we're trying to avoid platinum or other immunosuppressive type chemotherapies, even though they're quite valuable. There's a belief, and there's a study from the CCC consortium looking at COVID patients and IOs that suggests that IOs are not as dangerous in the setting of COVID-19. And of course, I wrote coming soon, but it's actually already been FDA approved, this idea of switch maintenance with avelumab. That means that you give chemo up front, and rather than just following them, you maintain them with avelumab maintenance therapy. And I think that that's going to become the standard of care if the studies that are looking right now at chemo plus IO turn out to be negative. So right now, you can give platinum chemotherapy up front, but if you're in the midst of the pandemic and you want to avoid it, you can give instead an IO if the patient is PD-L1 positive. Second line, there's an interesting thing that's been going on because there's two new classes of drugs in this setting. Of course, all those other drugs, those IOs are approved in the second line. So if the patient hasn't received a checkpoint inhibitor, you can certainly give them a checkpoint inhibitor in the second line. But there's these two interesting new drugs, enfortumab vedotin, which is targeted towards Nectin-4, which is a very commonly expressed molecule on the surface of bladder cancers. And it's one of those vedotins, so it's an antibody drug conjugate that delivers a lethal type of chemotherapy right at the site of the cancer cell. And then there's erdafitinib, which is a targeted drug that targets FGFR, which is not a common mutation. This is probably present in up to 20% of bladder cancers in the second line, but it is a choice for some of these patients. And both of these drugs can have side effects that might form your decision, but enfortumab, of course, is like chemo, so it is something that you may choose to avoid in the second line if you have a lot of COVID-19 in your community. Renal cancer also has had a lot of activity. This is a busy slide, but I tried to color code it. Immunotherapies in the first line being on top in yellow, and then targeted therapies, TKIs and beyond in orange. And you can see what's happening in green is the combo. And of course, the combos are really where it's at and where it's going to be. Either combos of IO-IO or TKI-IO. This is just a brief summary of what to do in first line metastatic RCC. And you can see that you have the choice, FDA approved, of axitinib plus pembro or avelumab. I think many people like this combo because it includes both a TKI, which can induce a response quickly, and also an IO at the same time. Or if you have intermediate or high risk disease, you can consider ipi/nivo. Cabo alone is also a choice for these patients, especially if you don't want to use an IO in the first line. And cabo as a single agent, TKI is probably the most active TKI. So what has COVID-19 done? Well, again, I think there's a few choices. One is you can actually delay therapy in some patients, even with metastatic renal cell carcinoma. We know that there are some people who have fulminant disease, but some patients can wait a little while, and that's what we've done in some of these patients. The other choice is to use something like cabo up front and add an IO later. There is the CheckMate 9 ER study. We saw the press release for this. We know that it's probably positive. So we think that Cabo plus Nivo will become a combo, just like the other TKI IO combos. Whether it's better or worse, we don't know. We know that it's better than sunitinib, but that could be an option because Cabo alone is a reasonable upfront TKI option. So just briefly, I'm going to go over two interesting cases that happened in the midst of the pandemic.